of, and that's kind of when you can begin. So what's interesting is here, I'm going to read chapter 6, 5 through a few verses following, and just listen for what happens, because what we're going to see is a bit of introduction, setting the stage, and then the story begins. It's really fascinating how this goes. For those of you who like literature, the Bible is the greatest. Verse 5, the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord regretted that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. So the Lord said, I will blot out man whom I have created from the face of the earth, from the face of the land, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the heavens, for I am sorry that I have made them. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. These are the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his generation. Noah walked with God, and Noah and his three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. So the first point, the first thing I want us to see out of this is that Noah finds favor in a corrupt generation, amongst a corrupt people, in a violent world where everything is upside down. Noah finds favor. We've seen that men are violent and everything is evil and there's all this chaos going on. But why? Why is God going to establish, and we'll see this in a minute, that God is going to establish his covenant with Noah. Why? Why does he do that? Verse 6-9 says, Noah was a righteous man, blameless in all his ways. Now, when I read that, there's two thoughts that come to mind. The first is because I think, if you're like me, you kind of have this shared understanding of what righteous is, right? Insert the word moral here. Good. Got his checklist and he's doing everything on it. Good job, buddy. But I want to read something else real quick. I want to flip over. It's still in this story to 8:21. After the ark has come to land and everything, the story's over or almost. Noah makes a sacrifice, and the Lord smells it, and he says, "I will never again curse the ground because of man, for the intention of man's heart is evil from his youth." There's a recognition. Now, it said that earlier, too. The intention of every man's heart is evil continually. Now, it doesn't say, later it says Noah found favor, but it doesn't say there, except for Noah and his kids. It says man's heart. So what is it? Why does Noah find favor? Why does it call Noah righteous? We got to break this cycle. We Christian people really like the word righteous because we think it's behavioral. It's not. All through the Bible, we see things like Abraham believed God and God said, okay, now you're righteous. It's about a certain recognition that we have, not deeds that we do. Noah's righteousness is based really on one thing, I believe, and this is inferred from the story. He made a sacrifice, though. You know why? Because he knew he needed God's mercy. That's why people tend to make sacrifices. He recognized something in himself that he had a need for something from God. That was the first thing. And then the second thing, he responded to God out of obedience. He recognized his relationship with God was based on God's mercy. And in return for that mercy, he would live a certain way, not the other way around. This is why I say we got to break this. We got to shake this up a little bit. Because we love to believe that our relationship with God is based on how good we are. Even people like me who is sitting up here in front of you right now telling you these things, I'll go home and I'll think, well, at least I did this and this and this. Or at least I didn't do this and this and this. We do that because we are wicked, evil continually. That's what we do. We need to remember that our position with God is based on Him, not on us. And then respond to that out of a certain type of lifestyle. This is a life of obedience. So, what do we... Okay, just quickly, my mom used to have this phrase. Shock some of you. She would say, I loved it, it was fun. The world's going to hell in a handbasket. I've heard it before, I've said it myself. But I just want to point something out. This is what we call proto-history. This is the primordial earth, okay? This is way back that this story happened. And it was there already. I just want to be clear that when we look around or we read the newspaper or we turn on whichever news outlet we prefer to watch and they tell us all about the horrors of the world and we sit there, we go, oh, what are we going to do? I just want you to remember, this is not new. Maybe there's a few things that are different from your grandparents' generation, but you know what? In my past family history, because I grew up in the South, we had a few other issues. So I'm glad we don't have racial slavery anymore, that's for sure. The world's always been there. It's a matter of what can we do about it. And then the other thing I just want us to think about is, where are we? What is our position before God? Number one, are you feeling pretty good about it because you've got a pretty nice record? Number two, are you thinking, nah, we kind of just agree to disagree. He leaves me alone, I leave him alone. Let me promise you that was somewhat, some of those people who went under had that type of relationship with God. Or do you say, I am utterly dependent on His mercy and grace? And then are you living that out? Second point I want us to see is that, and this is really interesting, Noah finds favor for his entire family. Check this out. Now, if you're careful and you're reading through this story, there's a certain thing that's going to really pop out to you if you read through it all. Chapter 6, 17. I'm going to read a couple of verses. For behold, I will bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh, in which is the breath of life, and die. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall come into the ark. You, your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives with you. 7:7 says, and Noah and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives went with him into the ark to escape the waters of the flood. 7:13, on the very same day, Noah and his sons Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and Noah's wife and the three wives of his son with them entered the ark. Chapter 8:16. As the ark has come to land, God says to Noah, go out from the ark, you and your wife and your sons' wives with you. Bring out with you every living thing that is with you, all flesh, birds and animals and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, and that they may swarm on the earth and be fruitful and multiply on the earth. So Noah went out, and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives with him. See this repetition? Constant repetition reminding us that the whole family is there. And then he says, every beast, every creeping thing, every bird, everything that moves on the earth went out by families from the ark. There is a constant repetition and refrain of family. Like I said, the careful reader that's kind of paying attention to that story is going to feel that throbbing and pulsing in the story constantly, over and over. Now, why? Why does God do that? Why are we remembering that? Part of it is that they want to point out to us, or to the original hearers as well, just because we had creation, we talked about that last week, two people, right? It obviously grew. We know what happens. Their kid murders his brother. So pretty quick off, people become sort of messed up after they eat the fruit. And yet, and now we get here, and there's several people, you know, lots of generations have passed, and it's just violent and evil and wicked, right? So instead of setting everything back to zero, God could have said Noah and his wife, right? Could have said, I just need two people. We're starting over. He didn't. He started with a family instead. So instead of going all the way back, God invests. He invests into the future. He's recognizing the value in this human family that's come about. It's not about the kids. Noah found favor. It's not about the other people. Look at Ham. We have a story just a chapter later where one of Noah's sons, you know, is laughing at him naked. Noah's drunk. I mean, that's a whole other story about family dysfunction. But it's not, I mean, this is the Bible. Somebody once said it should come with a sticker on the front that says parental advisory. And I said, yeah. I mean, it's not family-friendly reading. They were messed up, but they were rescued because of Noah, because God wanted to invest in this family moving forward. That's one reason. That's part of what builds into why we baptize Lake this morning. We believe that this whole family is what matters. Thinking about that, you know, one of the hardest things for me looking out is recognizing the trend in our culture, and this is statistically proven over and over and over again, that fewer of your kids will be in church than you. I've got a few hunches why, but the question I want us to answer is, will your kids be as faithful as you are? Will your grandkids be as faithful? What can we do to make sure? Young families, teach them. But please, and hear this, teach your kids love for Christ, not obedience. This is a tricky thing. This is hard. I fail at this all the time. I don't want my kids to obey me or Jesus because it's the right thing to do. I want them to obey because they love what he's done for them. To respond to him not out of moral duty, but out of affection. Teach them that. Older folks, maybe your kids are gone, maybe your kids moved away to another town, maybe they're in church there, maybe they're not. You got time on your hands to invest in young families here, to get to know them, to love them, to help them, to say, you know, when I had kids, here's some mistakes I made, or here's some of the things I did that worked out well. Do that. Let's ensure that future generations are committed to the things of God. Another interesting thing that happens here is that Noah represents a head, a figurehead, and his family is saved. In very much the same way, though not perfectly, but in the same way that Jesus is a head. See, we get on the ark, so to speak, not because we deserve to be there, just like Noah's family, but because we belong to Jesus. That's what gets us on the ark. Same as his family. So, just an interesting point that you get to see that pop up. Third thing I want us to see is that Noah finds favor because God is gracious. We'll read from 9:1, just a few verses here. God blessed Noah and his sons, and he said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. The fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth and upon every bird of the heavens, upon every creeping thing on the ground and all the fish of the sea. Into your hand they are delivered. Every moving thing that lives shall be food for you. And as I gave you the green plants, I give you everything. But you shall not eat flesh with its life, that is, its blood, and for your life blood I will require reckoning. For every beast I will require it from man, and from his fellow man I will require a reckoning for the life of man. Whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed, for God made man in his own image. And you, be fruitful and multiply, increase greatly on the earth and multiply." You see this constant refrain. God is interested in progressing and building up the future. "Then God said to Noah and his sons with him, 'Behold, I establish my covenant with you and your offspring after you, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the livestock, every beast of the earth with you, as many as came out of the ark. It is for every beast in the earth. I establish my covenant with you, that never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of the flood, and never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth. And God said, this is the sign of the covenant that I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you. For all future generations, I have set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. When I bring clouds over the earth and the bow is seen in the clouds, I will remember my covenant that is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. And all the waters shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. When the bow is in the clouds, I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is in the earth. God said to Noah, this is the sign of the covenant I have established between me and all flesh that is on the earth. This is interesting. There's a few things happening here. I want to point out. First, God is reconfirming his commitment to this human project that he had started with Adam. Remember that? There was a mention back then in 3:15 of the seed or the offspring. There's a promise. If you know the story and you've heard me talk about it, you know this, because I just love this. Happens so early on in the Bible. Soon as man and woman fall, as soon as they eat the fruit, God shows up and he says, here's what I'm going to do. The seed of the woman, the offspring of the woman, is going to crush the head of the seed of the serpent. Sort of a promise to look forward to, right? So there will be a seed, and it's coming. Now, in 9:9, it says, I establish my covenant with you and your seed. So it's not just with Noah. It's for everyone that would follow down that line. So he's reconfirming a promise. Despite sin, despite judgment, despite the fact that he had to do this, this promise still stands. The second thing that's interesting is that he has extended this promise here. Early on, the ground was cursed, and there was a promise made, we just talked about, to man and woman. But now, while the ground is still cursed, God has extended his covenant of restoration to not just people, but to all of creation. How many times here does he say, every living thing that creeps along the ground, all flesh that is in the earth, over and over and over, this covenant stands with creation. And that immediately made me think of Romans chapter 8. For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it. That was Adam, us. In the hope that the creation itself will be free from its bondage to corruption and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth. All of creation has this promise from God that it will be restored and it will not be destroyed again. And then the third thing that we need to see is that God is willing to sacrifice, to endanger himself in order to keep this covenant. I think one of the greatest tragedies of our culture, good, Ashley's not in the room, is that we think rainbow and we think pretty ribbons. Because it never says rainbow in the Bible. It says bow. If you wanted to think of a bow in this culture, do you know what you're thinking of? An army bow, a war bow. That's what this image is. When you see a rainbow in the sky, don't think flowers and daffodils, okay? Think arrow aimed directly into the heart of God. That's what happened. That's exactly the image that's intended here. Is that when it rains on the earth, he says, when it rains on the earth and the bow is in the clouds, I will remember my covenant. It's a promise that we have. When we look at it, we can also remember that. But it doesn't say that's for us. Now, if somebody aims a bow at you, you're going to think pretty hard, aren't you? Wait a minute, I'm in danger here. That's exactly the intention of this message, is for us to recognize that God is willing to put himself in harm's way in order to keep his promises of restoration to his people. And we see that way back in the beginning of Genesis. And then when the story plays itself out, as we will share this meal together, we remember and we look back and we go, wait a minute. God ultimately did put himself in harm's way and even death in order to keep his covenant of restoration. Let me pray for us. Jesus, help us to respond to you out of love, not out of duty. Help us to love you for what you've done for us. Make it real in our hearts and in our minds. It's in your name. Amen. We celebrate this meal because we struggle.